So let me just introduce myself to begin with. I haven't met all of you, and even those I have met, it's always good to reacquaint ourselves. My name is Sammy Bergman. I am Miskan Rosh Beit Midrash, Beit Midrash Zichron Zov, and it's really a pleasure to meet many of you for the first time and to learn Torah with you. It is the end of a long fast day, and I understand it's understandable that it is a bit difficult to stay in the game. So I'm going to highly encourage participation throughout this year, not going to demand or require, but highly encourage participation. So please raise a hand if you are interested. So if I were to ask the following question, here we've been fasting for the last 16 hours or so, those of us who, like me, were early risers and wanted to eat breakfast this morning, why is it that we have been fasting today? What is it that we are commemorating? It's going to be that difficult. Anyone have any answers? Yes, so what is your name, please?
Shmuel Rosenblatt.
Shmuel Rosenblatt. I love that name. My name is also Shmuel. Yeah.
up until essentially this day, there was actually a hope that the Beit HaMikdash basically just would be rebuilt, and then with the death of Gedalia, that sort of erased the...
Wow. So you're already getting pretty advanced. So that's a lot. A lot you just said. So I would have just said simply, well, Gedalia died, right? That's why it's called Tzom Gedalia, because there's a person named Gedalia. A bit of background, Gedalia was appointed by the king of Babel, by Nebuchadnezzar, to rule and direct and govern the remaining Jews who were in Eretz Yisrael, in Jerusalem, and he was killed. Now, if I said that, would that be a sufficient reason to have a fast day? Any thoughts that Gedalia was killed? So, not to make light of it, but so what is a good question, you know? I have a feeling that many people were killed today, and we don't commemorate all their deaths with a fast day. It's an unfortunate circumstance.
Also,
yeah.
Also, if we were to appoint a fast day for every time a king of Israel was killed, we would be performing through Sefer Melachim.
Yes, and in fact, if you actually... if you take a look at Source 3, this is exactly Marashah's problem. So, actually take a step back for a second. If you look at Source Aleph, it is true. The reason that we fast today is because of the fact that Gedalia ben Achikam was killed. If you look at the first source, it's Source Aleph. Tzomash Shevi'i says Shlosh Tishrei. It's referencing a pasuk in Zechariah, which mentions a bunch of different fast days, and one of them is called the Fast of the Seventh. And it says, this is the third of Tishrei, Shabo Nehra Gedalia ben Achikam. This is the day that Gedalia ben Achikam was killed. Umi Hargo, and who killed him? It's interesting the Gemara is asking this question. So Yishmael ben Nisanya Hargo. It was Yishmael ben Nisanya. Lomecha, to teach you, Shekulam mitatan shal tzadikim kisreifat beit Elokeinu, that the death of the righteous is equivalent to the burning of the house of our God. So it would seem that the Gemara is indeed saying that it is so horrible, so sad that Gedalia ben Achikam was killed. It is equivalent to the burning of the house of God, and therefore that is why we are fasting. Now that in and of itself requires a bit of explanation. What is this equation between the death of a righteous person and the burning of the Beit HaMikdash? And on a simple level, without going into too much, it represents the idea that a righteous person, the Shechina resides within him or her, that by living up to the Torah ideals, a Torah lifestyle, through imbibing the Torah within one's personality, that is a certain representative of the Shechina, akin to that of the Beit HaMikdash, and when that person passes away, it is worth mourning over. But, as Marsha points out here in Source Gimel, if we mourn over every single righteous person who passed away, then we would have a fast day every single day. And no one wants that, right? Enough fast days. So it can't be that it's just because a righteous person died. Which brings us to Shmuley's point, and that is what the Rambam says in Source Dalet. Take a look at the Rambam. Yom Shlishi B'Tishrei, Shebo Nehra Gedalia ben Achikam, says, why do we fast on the third day of Tishrei? It's because on that day, Gedalia, the son of Achikam, was killed. V'nichbeit Gachalat Yisrael, and on that day, the ember of Israel was extinguished, Hanishara, which was remaining, V'sive V'atem Galutan, and it caused the completion of their exile. That this killing of Gedalia, who was the Jewish governor at the time, represented more than just any tzaddik who is killed. Of course, it's always sad, but this represented the last straw. It was our last hope to achieve a redemption. Important point to keep in mind, and this was it. And that is why we fast. So, okay, that would be a pretty good answer. That being said, I am still a bit perturbed by this question. If we could think of a day in which we mourn a lot of horrific things that happen to us, right? Many of which are related to the Churban HaBayit, the destruction, the temple, to the exile. Which day would you pick? Anyone? If I were to say, you know, I have this horrific event that I want to mourn, and I need a day to mourn it, which day would you pick? Yeah, Ellie. Tisha B'Av, right? Now you might ask, well, you know, Tisha B'Av is just for the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, but is that true? Certainly not. Right? We have many, many things which we mourn on Tisha B'Av. You look through the keynote, it's not solely focused on just the destruction of the temple. Furthermore, we also specifically mourn the death of Tzadikim on Tisha B'Av as well, right? One of the keynote is relevant to the death of King Yoshiyahu. Certainly a very important king, a big righteous person, a king of Israel who was murdered or killed in war, and we mourn that on Tisha B'Av. So I would raise the possibility, shouldn't we have just thrown this in with the rest of the horrific things that happened around the time of the destruction of the temple? Was it really necessary? I'll add, the Gemara is indeed saying Gedaliah was this tzaddik, but what do we really know about Gedaliah anyway? You know, his name sounds like a pretty righteous sort of name. You know, Gedaliah sounds like a tzaddik, but we don't really know much about him at all. You know, all the tzaddikim that were murdered and killed, and there were many, during this process of the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, Gedaliah ben Achikam is really worth commemorating with this fast day? Is that really such a horrific event that we needed to have Tzom Gedaliah because of it? Seems a bit odd. Now I'll throw in one more thing, right? When is Tzom Gedaliah? Right, this is a pretty easy question. When do we commemorate Tzom Gedaliah? Now. What is now? What's the Hebrew date? The third Tishrei, right? Now, is that just some sort of coincidence? Now, it happens to be that, according to one opinion, Gedaliah was killed on the third of Tishrei, right? That's why we happen to commemorate it here. If you look in the first source, it did say the third of Tishrei. Happens to be that if some Mefarshim argue that Gedaliah was not killed on the third of Tishrei, rather he was killed on Rosh Hashanah itself. If you look at source Bet, the Radak comments here that it says, Bechodesh HaShivi'i. Kimo Machar Chodesh, right? This idea of Chodesh means the first day of the month. Like in the Pasuk where Yehonatan is talking to David HaMelech, he says Machar Chodesh, the day after Rosh Chodesh. Rosh Hashanah Nera Gedaliah ben Achikam, right? Pretty horrific. On Rosh Hashanah itself, the Yom HaDin, the Day of Judgment. Maybe Rath Roshofer blowing. You know, he walked out of Shul and then Gedaliah was killed. A pretty horrific event. But is it just a coincidence that it just so happened to be that we commemorate this event during the Aseret Yemei Tshuvah period, or could there be more to that? Could it be, I'd like to suggest, that there's something about the story of Gedaliah, the horrific tragedy surrounding the death of Gedaliah, that points us in the direction of the process that we undertake during these Aseret Yemei Tshuvah? And that is what I'd like to suggest, and to argue that point, I would like to go to source Vav. So, this requires a bit of background. Gedaliah is actually killed after the destruction of the Second Temple. Before that, though, it is worth noting, this is in the book of Yirmiyah. Yirmiyahu HaNavi had a very difficult job, and that was, his job was to get B'nai Yisrael to do tshuvah, and to tell them that if they don't do tshuvah, then really bad things will happen. And what usually happens when this happens is that Yirmiyahu HaNavi gives them mussar. He says, you have to repent, you have to do tshuva, you have to stop worshiping idolatry. And if you don't, the Beit HaMikdash is going to be destroyed. And as a result of his righteous act, he gets thrown in jail numerous times. Now, toward the end of this process, Yirmiyahu HaNavi says, you know, this is going to happen. The Beit HaMikdash is going to be destroyed. The king of Babylon is going to besiege and conquer Yerushalayim. And not only that, but those of you who do not surrender to the king of Babylon will become killed. And your only chance at survival is if you surrender to Babel, to the king of Babylon. That is the only chance that you have to survive. When the Jewish people heard this, many of them, most of them, were not exactly willing to give in to this. They weren't willing to give up on this hope. What do you mean? The Beit HaMikdash is going to be destroyed? Really? Can't be. It's been around for hundreds of years. And they refused to give in to Bavel. They refused to surrender to Nebuchadnezzar. So much so that right before our story, Tzikyo HaMelech has given one last warning. Yirmiyahu says, if you give in to the Melech Bavel, then you have hope. If you do not, you will be killed, and the whole city will be burnt down. Tzikyo HaMelech doesn't have the guts to do it. He says, I can't. The people are going to rebel against me. They're not going to like this. I can't do it. Let's just pretend this conversation never happened. And sure enough, Yirmiyahu, again, is right. After all, he's a prophet, right? He usually makes the right call on these things. And that is exactly what happens. So then we have this story of Gedaliah ben Achikam, who was appointed to be the governor of Yerushalayim by the king of Bavel to rule over the Jews. And as the story goes, unfortunately, Gedaliah is executed by this person, Yishmael. Now before going to that exact story of the execution, I wanted to take a look at this first pasuk which introduces Yishmael. It's on source Vav. It says, Vayhi b'cho ha-shashvi, was on that seventh month, Ba Yishmael ben Nesanya ben Elishama mizera hamlucha. Yishmael, the son of Nesanya, the son of Elishama, comes, and he is from the royal seed. V'rabbe ha-melech v'asara nashim ito, and one of the chief officers of the king, and there were 10 people with him. El Gedaliah ben Achikam mitzpasa. They come to mitzpah where Gedaliah is. V'yochlu sham lechem yachta ba-mitzpah. And they eat bread together there in mitzpah. So what I want to focus on here is that the Navi specifically points out that he was Mizera HaMalucha, that Yishmael was from royal seed, royal stock. Why do you think that might be relevant in this pasuk? Why is that necessary to mention? Yishmael is the murderer of Gedaliah. That is what we are about to read. Why is it important that he was from royal stock? As the Mefarshim say, Malchut Beit David, that he was a descendant of David HaMelech. Why might that be relevant?
Competition for the throne.
Meaning?
Meaning somebody who's from the line of David has a much more natural claim than whichever shape Gedaliah is from.
Very good. So, as Shmuley is suggesting, if you take a look at source Zion in the Radah, the Radah says, Malchut Beit David v'kineh b'Gedaliah. And he was jealous. Jealous of Gedaliah. Shefkido melech Bavel al aretz. That the king of Bavel appointed him on the land of Israel. So that's certainly understandable. But I'd like to argue there might be a bit more than just jealousy going on here. So again, we have Yishmael. Yishmael is angry about the fact that Gedaliah is being appointed as king. He thinks that he has a right to kingship because he is a descendant of David. Now, do you think that is a good argument? In this particular circumstance, in the situation the Jews are in, given that they are now under control and ruled by the king of Bavel, is it a good argument to say that he should be the one that's in charge because he's from Zerah HaMelucha, the king of Malchut Beit David? No. Can't get your name? What's your name?
David.
You volunteer yourself by shaking your head, so I appreciate that. Why do you think that it is not a good argument? Why not?
Because if there was a Jew that was in charge of they're under foreign rule. Like, it'd be one thing
no one appointed Gedaliah. No one's appointing you. This was the Melech Bavel. This is not the Jewish kingdom anymore. We lost. The Babylonians won. That's it. Why are you getting so upset? Well, it might be that Yishmael is having a hard time accepting that. Not so simple, you know. Mizera hamlucha, I'm of royal lineage. I'm going to give that up. Now, to add to this point, if you look at source Chet, Rashi here tells us to answer another question. Well, why was it that Gedaliah was chosen to be the governor of the Jewish settlement in Israel? Why did they choose him? So we're not really told. So Rashi points us in the right direction and says, "Shenafal el hakasim," that Gedaliah surrendered to the Chaldeans, to the Babylonians, "Api Yirmiyahu," that he followed Yirmiyahu's advice, and he went to the army of Babylon and said, "Okay, I surrender." And in return for doing that, Nebuchadnezzar says, "Oh, here's a Jew I can trust," and he appoints him as the governor, the ruler over the Jewish settlement. And as you take a look here in source Tet, this is exactly, Rashi says, Al Pi Yirmiyahu, because Yirmiyahu indeed says, right? We're just saying it outside here for a second. Yirmiyahu says, look, you're going to have what choice? You have either life or death if you choose to remain in Jerusalem and fight and defend yourself against the Babylonians, you will die. If you want to have a hope, then what you must do is surrender to the Babylonians. And Gedaliah listens to the Navi, unlike almost everyone else. And he says, okay, looks like we have to surrender. It's over. We are going to lose. Now, putting these two narratives together, we have one side. We have the Yishmael side. The, I am not giving in. I am Yizera HaMlucha. I am from royal lineage. And we have, on the other side, Gedaliah. Gedaliah says we have to give in to Melech Bavel. That's it. We have just about no choice. So what might another motivation have been for Yishmael to carry out this treacherous act, aside from just being jealous? What argument is he putting forward here? What is he not willing to surrender to? Right. You could argue, hey, Gedaliah, really? You're going to give in? That's it? You've given up already? No way! No way! Mizera HaMlucha, we're not giving in. I'm not willing to give this up. It's over. And therefore it kills Gedaliah. We see this confusion, this inability to move past their current reality that the Beit HaMikdash is destroyed and the Jews have lost from other Jews as well. So after, as in the following Sukkim, which you just read, Yishmael indeed invites Gedaliah and he kills him. And after that, we have the following. If you take a look in source Yud, there are these people from Shechem, 80 people, and the pasuk describes them as follows. If you look at the second pasuk there, Megulche zakan ukru'e begadim umekodadim. They have shaved their beards, they have ripped their clothes, and they have cut themselves, which they're not supposed to do. They're so, upset about something. Umincha alavona biadam lavi beit Hashem. And they have a mincha, a meal offering, a flour offering, and livona, frankincense, to bring to the house of God. So why do you think that they cut themselves? Why they shave their beards? Why is their clothing ripped? When do you do that? When you're mourning. What are they mourning? What do you think?
State of the Jewish people.
Okay, good. And what specifically? The temple, right? The temple was destroyed. They're mourning. But what are they doing? What are they bringing? They're bringing korbanot, but I don't get it. Is the temple destroyed or not? It's like they're not even sure. I mean, they're in mourning, but they're also bringing korbanot. Like, they're so confused about the current reality, they don't even know how to function. Tragically, if you look at the continuing sukkim, Yishmael sort of invites them in. He says, come to Gedaliah. They don't know Gedaliah. Then he kills them all also. Not a very happy story, right? We wouldn't put Yishmael as the tzaddik of the year. Not going to get a mitzvah note home. Not a very good person. So he kills all of them. But this confusion, this inability to accept the reality of the situation, to look in the mirror and say, we messed up, the Beit HaMikdash is destroyed, and now we have to move on. They can't, they don't even know. They're mourning, but they're bringing korbanot. So I believe it's not just Yishmael that has this inability to move on. It is not just that the Jews who he killed had this inability. But to a certain extent, it's Gedaliah himself, right? Without going inside for lack of time. We know what happened to Gedaliah exactly, right? Before Gedaliah is killed, he's warned that there's this person who is being sent by Balas, king of Ammon, Yishmael. He's going to murder you. He's going to murder you. And what does Gedaliah say? Anybody know the story?
Lashon hara.
Yeah. No, I can't listen. Can't be. Lashon hara. I'm not listening. He's not going to do it. No way. Even previous to that, when Gedaliah gets to Yerushalayim, he gets to Israel. Actually, Mitzvah, not Yerushalayim. Sorry, I kept saying that. And he sort of greets the Jewish people. So you take a look at source Yudav. He says as follows. If you look at the bolded words. Al teru me'avod ha-kasim. Don't worry about serving the Babylonians. Shvu ba'aretz. Settle in the land. Vivdu et melech bavel v'tav lechem. It's going to be good. It's all going to be good. What do you think about that? Here he is coming into this Babylonian exile. And what's he say? It's all good. It's all going to be great. Realistic? Really? It's all going to be great? That's what you have to say? I mean, you could say this is the best opportunity that we have. That's what Yirmiyahu said. Pedaya says it's all good. It's as if he doesn't realize that the nation is torn to sunder, that people are don't know what to do with themselves. He's so convinced that everything is okay that he won't even believe the fact that someone wants to kill him who actually does kill him. And in fact, in recognition of this, the Gemara actually blames Gedaliah for the murder of these 80 people who Yishmael killed. Because had Gedaliah been a bit more careful and listened to this advice of being wary of Yishmael, maybe this whole thing would have been avoided. And what I'm trying to argue is that part of what happened here is the inability to look oneself in the mirror and face the reality that one is in. And that part of one impediment to tshuva is that sometimes we just refuse to look ourselves in the mirror and say, I messed up. It happened already. It was bad. And now I need to fix the situation. That the first step of tshuva is just to be able to accept the reality. If you take a look here at source of Gimel very quickly, it's a very long paragraph, but I love this first line of Rabbeinu Yonah, who has the whole sefer on tshuva. He says, "Hacharata." What's the first step? Regret. Yovin levavo ki ra v'mar azvo et Hashem. A person needs to understand that it is bad that they left God. That is the first step. You have to realize that what you did is bad. There is a problem here in your life, and you need to fix it. That is what the Jews could not do. They cannot look themselves in the mirror and say, we messed up, now let's move on. And as we leave Rosh Hashanah and we enter this process of tshuva, during the Aser Yemei Tshuva, I think maybe an idea behind Tzom Gedaliah is this idea of being able to look ourselves in the mirror and take that first step. The truth is, it's a very sort of sad idea at first glance, looking at oneself in the mirror, you know, telling myself I did something wrong, I'm bad. But it doesn't have to be left with that emotional outlook. Take a look here at the last source I have here. Rav Kook and Orot HaTshuvah, with this will end. Rav Kook says, you know, as much as it hurts to tell oneself they messed up, they made a mistake, it's also cathartic. It also begins this process of renewal. And that in the context of improving, in the context of becoming better and raising one's level of Orat Hashem and coming close to God, looking oneself in the mirror and saying, I did the wrong thing, that feeling that you had, it indeed connects you to your soul. It gets you in touch with the real you. And that feeling ends up being a rewarding feeling. The ability to say, I understand what's happening and I need to move on and improve from it. And in that vein, we should, as we end Tzom Gedaliah, and soon as we enjoy our wonderful Reik Fast, we should keep this in mind and have the ability to have the courage to look in the mirror, to make that first step and say, you know, I messed up, I did something wrong, but now I can improve upon it, and now it can be better. And we should all be able to have a wonderful tshuva shlema, and bizocha to a shana, tova mituka for us and our families and our entire community. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Rabbi. We are going to be diving more